In business, in life, for any purpose, commercial endeavor, romance, fraternal, charitable, anytime. One side is always asking the other, consciously or unconsciously, formally or informally, actively or inactively, to take on in the transaction more, most, all, more than all the risk. Depends on the transaction, depends on the area. But the point is, if you can isolate in the transactions you're doing in your business, trying to basically generate commerce, going out and selling it to the marketplace, or trying to get people to invest, that people are terrified of risk. Everyone thinks venture capitalists are phenomenally, and all kinds of financiers are obsessed with the upside. They are, but they're probably more fanatical today than ever before about making certain they hedge the down. Risk. Risk. To the extent you can become masterful at risk reversal, masterful at understanding how to eliminate, how to hedge, how to control, how to totally reduce the risk factor on the part of the other side in the transaction. Whether the transaction you're talking about is the raising of capital, or whether the transaction is trying to sell your product or service to another company, or whether the transaction is trying to go to a strategic partner who's got the market you want to serve, and the technology you need to plug into and you don't have the capital, and getting them to plug into yours, take away the risk. You own the transaction. Maximize the risk. It's much harder to say yes than no. Okay? One other thing. Very important. And this will translate in three ways. It'll translate to your money raising. It'll translate to your marketing. It'll translate to your competitive advantage.
In my own life, when I did consultations, it was very simple. I charged people $5,000 an hour, but at 15 minutes into the hour session, I would stop and say, okay, Mr. Client, if you have not already gotten at least your $5,000 worth, or hopefully a multiple more, if you haven't already gotten tangible activities, actions, strategies, tactics that you can apply immediately, if you haven't already mentally been able to validate that it's going to make you a profit well and above the $5,000, I don't want to keep your money. Do you want a refund? When I did training programs, we charged $5,000 to $25,000. We would stop halfway through the second day of a three-day event and say, okay, if you haven't already gotten your $5,000 benefit, come to the back room, we'll write you a check back. We actually did a seminar where we actually took 200 people's $5,000 checks and we laid them out in the back of the room on a table for three solid days, and we didn't even deposit them until the end of the program. I get my clients to realize one thing. Either your product or service performs a result in people's lives that can be clearly denominated, or it doesn't. If it does, the more reason you should stand behind it with the most tangible and powerful risk reversal possible. Again, I could do 5 hours on risk reversal, and I have before, but it's important for you to realize that risk reversal is only one of the 50 or 100 additional ways you've got available to increase that first category, increasing the size of your clients. Let me go through a few more. Host-beneficiary relationships, going to all kinds of other companies that have strong endorsed relationship with their clients, with their members, with their readers, with their subscribers, and getting them to introduce you to them formally and continuously. Advertising. If you don't advertise and you added advertising to your activities, it will generate prospects and buyers that you can then turn into repeat buyers. Using direct mail, if all you do is salespeople, if all you do is word of mouth, if all you do is advertise right now and you don't do sales letters to get new prospects, if you don't do offers to make specific product or service propositions, if you don't go to new markets that you couldn't justify sending a salesperson to, and you start doing just that and that alone, it's a mind blow. It'll bring tons of people in. Running special events and information nights, just by doing seminars or promotions or special theme events at key times in the month, in the week, in the year, during holidays or seasons. That alone will draw tons of people that can be converted to new clients. Acquiring qualified lists. If right now you don't realize that out there are dozens, if not hundreds, of lists of qualified people who've already bought or are interested or are committed or are involved in the area of activity that your product or service deals and addresses with, and all you have to do is by getting those lists and by calling them or writing them or visiting them or continuously communicating with them, you could be attracting tons more clients. You're leaving wealth on the table. Developing a unique selling proposition. Earlier I talked about the fact that from the strategy of preeminence point of view, you want to be the only viable solution that they've got to the problem or the opportunity that's out there. From a practical standpoint, just by delineating and defining a greater performance advantage that your company and or your products or service delivers to your prospective client when that product or service is at work in their life or their business. That distinction alone, just giving a unique selling advantage to your product or service, will transform the effectiveness of every message you ever communicate through your sales force, through your advertising, through your sales letters, through your people visiting your facilities, talking on the phone. Case in point, when Federal Express first started, they immediately started denominating when it absolutely, positively has to be there by 10 a.m. tomorrow, FedEx. Well, that unique advantage that nobody else had ever offered defined and delineated them so clearly that people flocked to them. When Nordstrom's first came out, they said, if you're dissatisfied with any purchase for any reason at any time in the future, you're entitled to a refund, a replacement, or a credit. No questions asked. That was their unique selling proposition. When Avis came out originally, they said, we're number two, so we've got to do more and try harder than anybody else to make ourselves stand out as a greater value. And that delineation made sense. When Domino's first came out, they said, hot, fresh, delicious pizza delivered to your front door in 30 minutes or less, or it's yours free. That was their unique selling advantage. There are about 100 different ways you can delineate what distinguishes your business, your product, your service, performance-wise, in your client's life by a unique selling proposition. Your job is to figure out what it is and to add it to what you're doing, because that's another element in this geometric business growth, another concept, another factor that's going to add more clients to that first box, increase the number of clients. Let's do a couple more. You can use public relations. You can get articles written about you. You can write articles to the press. That alone gets people aware of you. That alone demonstrates you're an expert. That alone educates and informs people to pieces of the puzzle you understand, because now that you're following the strategy of preeminence, you are an advisor. You are educating them. Doing that and that alone and nothing else different would get dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands of quality prospects seeking you out. What's it worth to get people to solicit you instead of you soliciting them? Again, the bottom line is you've got available at any point in time dozens of superior performing options and alternatives you can add to your current activities to improve and optimize the geometric performance of every element. And in the element of increasing the number of clients, those are just a few of the powerful ways you've got. Exciting, isn't it? Take the next category, increasing the size of the transaction. Remember we started with these 1,000 clients buying a $100 unit of sale? Well, that's letting the clients buying what they want to buy. It's not with you adapting and applying the strategy of preeminence. It's not with you knowingly and consciously not ever again allowing them to buy less than they should, less combinations, less products or services together so that they can be assured of getting the greatest performance, the greatest outcome, the greatest benefit, the greatest advantage, the greatest security, the greatest protection, the greatest enjoyment. Now that you are consciously adapting and adopting and applying this strategy preeminence, and you're seeing yourself and all your people working with your clients, being their trusted advisors, and you're giving them the best reason, most expert recommendation of the purchase package that's going to give that client the greatest performance, the greatest outcome, you will never, ever, ever again allow them to buy less than they should, in less combinations than they should, less frequently than they should. But that alone will never allow you to let them to buy just what they want to buy. Instead, you'll always encourage them to buy what they need to buy, what they should buy, what is in their best interest to buy. And that will frequently be larger, more qualitative sizes, categories, and combinations of your products or services. The next thing is you've probably never consciously experimented with trying to get your clients to buy more at the time of purchase, and yet it's in their best interest. Let me give you a point in reference. Guess what drove the entire discount buying, warehouse buying concept. The Costcos, the Sam Clubs, the Price Clubs wouldn't be here today if some brilliant, elegant thinker hadn't said, well, you know what? By making it more advantageous for them to buy larger quantities, people will buy more and we'll make more, even if we make less margin per item. And the whole advent of the warehouse club was based on giving people to buy more. It used to be they'd buy one jar of peanut butter. Now they buy 25 jars, or they buy the gallon jar. It used to be they'd buy one roll of toilet paper. Now they buy 24 rolls. The Price Clubs and the Sam's Club, by just offering larger units of sale, increased dramatically, 3, 4, 5 times over the size of the purchase. Well, in your business, selling your products or services, believe me, right now people are buying what they're buying on their own volition, probably without you consciously trying to direct or, as a preeminent and a strategic thinker, guiding them to what's going to be in their better outcome. If you start doing that and that alone, you're going to get them to buy larger purchases. You're going to get them to buy more qualitative selections of the product or service. You're going to get them to add more products and services together in combinations. You're going to get them to basically think totally differently. But there are a number of other qualitative ways and ethical ways you've got available to get those people buying more and buying really larger units of sale that are more profitable to you. But that profit is only going to be the bonus reward you get for making it easier and better for them to use your product or service. First thing is by having back-end products. You can basically add other products to the purchase right there and then. If they buy a product, there's probably a logical service or additional product that goes along with it. Maybe you've always had it, but you've never offered it. Maybe you've never offered it, but it's available and you could supply it. You could distribute it. You could acquire it. You could license it.
A back end is the residual value you get out of having either other products or services to resell or other ways to use utility. I'll give you three different examples. One of my great claims to fame is we took a brokerage firm in the gold business back in the halcyon days of hard money and rising interest rates back in the 70s from $300,000 to $500 million in 2 years. Now that sounds impressive. It only worked on 2.5% to 5% margins, so they were only making about $25 million, but it really was a great feat. We did it by understanding the back end. When I met them, they just sold gold and they did nothing else, and they reactively waited for people to buy more. I developed a migration system that the first thing when they bought gold was we sold them more gold because we thought that was safer. After they were comfortable with gold, we then introduced them to silver, and we sold them a little bit of silver. Then we sold them more silver. Then we sold them, after they were happy with silver, very qualitative numismatics, because those were at that time good. We started them, we progressed them. Then when they did that, we sold them gold stocks. Then we sold them other kinds of esoteric collectibles, and it was perpetual. That's one approach. Another approach to the back end is, one time the same company, I created an offer that we went out in the market with that sold starter kits, self-liquidated, meaning we made nothing on them, $25 starter kit on coins. We sold about 100,000 of them. We found that on the back end, we could go back, I call this concentric circles. We got about 60,000 people to come back and buy at least $5,000. Of the 60,000, we got about 10,000 to come back and buy at least 50,000. Of the 10,000, we got about 4,000 to come back and buy about 100,000. Of the 4,000, we were able to go back, and we had to go proactively. We didn't just sit and wait. We got about 2,000 of them to buy another of that same amount, and we got about 500 to buy $1 million or more. I had a seminar business for about 15 years. We'd go to an endorser, and I would go out, first of all, selling my $5,000 to $10,000 to $25,000 live seminars. We would do very well. But I thought, well, I've invested all this amount of money establishing my posture, my persona, my prominence in the market to get a few people to spend $5,000 or $25,000. So then I'd go back, and I would go and I'd sell the home study version for $2,000. Then I'd go back and I'd sell something for $500. It was really cheap. Then I'd sell something, I'd go back up the rung. A back end is like American Express has started buying accounting practices. Any of you who know CPA firms, well, they're not buying because they give a damn about controlling a bunch of tax preparation revenue. They want to have a preemptive back end hold on all the financial services that will emanate from all the small businesses like you all and the successful growing businesses like you all are and will become, that they can get, you know, gargantuan back ends. I had a company one time, they sold aerobics apparel back in the heydays of aerobics. And they came to me for a breakthrough, and they had no back end of it. They had two products. That was their line. And I looked at what they had. They were marginally successful, but they had something that lent itself massively to back end. They had 5,000 quality accounts, including all the Kmarts, all the Park Lane hosieries, all the Nordstroms, and two or three other chains. I said, you idiot. Your back end is the pipeline. It's getting other people's products that are not selling well or don't have marketing. Don't take them over as a rep. Take them over as a principal. Give them a royalty and put them through your pipeline. They made millions of dollars by realizing that.
You can cross-sell. There's tons of other services out there that you may sell or you may be able to provide that are logical complements. They are desperately necessary to be used before, during, or after the use of your product or service in somebody's business or life. Just by adding that to the purchase, you could double, triple, quadruple the size of the purchase and increase by multiples of that the profit from that transaction while doing the client a far greater service, a point of reference. It is critically important that you distinguish in your mind and you clarify a distinction right now. Many people in business see themselves just as a widget manufacturer or a this or that kind of a product or service provider. I urge you, I implore, I beseech you from today forward to see your role not as just providing the one product or service, but providing the most productive, profitable, and successful outcome your client can get in the category of activity or area that your current product or service applies. When you broaden your reference paradigm, when you see yourself not just selling them the nut, but the bolt too, and the tool, and also the lubricant to apply it and open it, and also the tool belt to carry it in, you have broadened by a function that is geometric your reference paradigm. You have increased dramatically your own self-permission to offer and to encourage them to buy far more, find more combinations to get a far greater outcome. Because guess what? If they don't buy it from you, you who care more, who are striving more to see them get a greater outcome, who are trying to give them more value, more education, more performance for their investment dollar. If they don't buy it from you, they're going to go to somebody else. And remember my reference model of the half-filled glass of water? They're going to go to somebody who's just going to take their money not caring. Do you really want that on your conscience? That statement's not meant to be a theatrical statement. It is a moral requirement. I think you have a business and a moral obligation to expand your reference paradigm and think far broader about the responsibility, the opportunity, and the obligation your company has to help your client get the greatest combined, and the operative word is combined, outcome from the purchase they make from you. The more product services you can combine to make that outcome richer, more successful, more productive, more profitable, more satisfying, the better it is for them. Coincidentally and fortuitously, the benefit bonus to you for doing that for them is you make more money, but that isn't even your focus. Remember, you're now living the strategy of preeminence existence. You can improve your team's selling techniques for upselling and cross-selling. Earlier I talked about the fact that if you just got formally trained, if you just bought a Nightingale Conant basic program in consultative or advisory selling, and they only sell about 25 different experts, that alone exposed to your team members who have any contact, both the salespeople and the client contact people, that alone will increase the performance of your business 10 to 300% instantaneously and sustainingly. But that same education will improve your salespeople's and your clerk's ability and your phone people and your order department and your service people's ability to ethically and nobly cross-sell and upsell better performing products, services, combinations, just by getting them to be better consultative advisory salespeople. Remember, from this point forward, you are a trusted advisor. Trusted advisors need to be trained in consultative advisory selling, because if not, you're incongruent. You're living one role, but you're acting another. That's low torque. That's underperforming leverage. You want maximum leverage. The next point is use point of purchase promotions. Do you ever go into a 7-Eleven? You ever go into a McDonald's? You ever see a sign on the counter? You ever drive down a store and see a sign out front, or a balloon or a dirigible flying with a sign out front? Well, guess what? Those simple point of purchase activities drive 15, 20, sometimes 50% of the sales, and sometimes a higher percentage of the profits. If you have any kind of contact with people in person, whether it's in your facilities, at their facilities, if it's at a trade show, any other thing in between, by doing point of purchase, that will increase the product, services, quantity, and size of the transaction almost in spite of anything you do or say. So use it. Increasing your pricing so often When we sell a lot of different products or services, we price them all at the same margins unnecessarily. Tests have been done and some products or services that are ancillary, added to the sale at the point of purchase, actually have a higher perceived value when you raise the price, 50%, double, even triple. Price perception has more to do with your ability to describe and define and denominate the outcome, the performance, the benefit, the impact of that product added to the prospective client's life or business than any price alone. It's not just for $3 more you can have this. It might be that for $6 more you can have this outcome. And instead of focusing on the generic static product, focus all your effort on the transactional implications and the benefit and the enhancement, maybe doubling or tripling productivity or safety of having that product added to the life in the transactional process. Another thing, changing the profile of your product, making it more upscale. We did work one time with a chain of mini marts, and they had a single pricing across the board. And we showed them that maybe there are certain prices that are reference prices that people refer to just as their comparative, like bread and milk, because it's a leader in a lot of grocery stores. But it didn't matter to people whether they spent 99 cents or $1.29 on a Coke. It didn't matter whether they spent 90 cents or $1.39 for a hot dog. But that 40 cent more made them actually seem like a better hot dog, made it seem like a better Coke, a larger Coke. And by changing that price, we would double or triple profit. All you got to do is experiment. We'll talk about testing in a separate module in a few minutes. Offering greater larger units of purchase. Just by saying, okay, it's great that you bought this dozen units of my product, but if the product does what I say and works, you're going to keep buying it over and over again. Why don't you buy a 3-month supply right now? Because I'll give you a 10% discount. Why do you care if you get people locked into more usage and more habitual use of the product, and you also get, instead of making X dollars, you make 2.5 times X profit dollars at that sale? So just by experimenting and trying things, you're going to increase the size of the sale dramatically. Remember, my reference example when I started was, we're trying to show you how easy it is to just get a 10% increase in the size of the clients. Remember, I showed you only about 20 different things you weren't doing, any one of which would give you 10% there. I just showed you about 7 things you could do in a blitzkrieg, any one of which could increase the size of the transaction by at least 10% and probably by 50% or 500%. But will you agree with me that it's not too hard to increase those 2 transactional components by 10%? Finally, the frequency of purchase. Keep in mind, most people buy on their own automatically a certain number of times. They come back twice or they come back 3 times just because that's of their own volition. By you getting proactively, strategically, and preemptively involved in guiding them to what's in their best interest, you can almost always get them to come back more often and for more things. You can do it by developing more back ends that they either come back for, or that you send out to them, or that the sales force has to come back and talk about. Just by calling them more often, people have found the more times you contact people, as long as you give them great education and information, whether it's phone call, whether it's visits, whether it's sales letters, the more things and the more times people purchase. It is a scientific, documented, clinical fact. People think, oh, I don't want to intrude, are doing themselves and their clients a disservice. If your product or service has any benefit, any impact on their lives or their business, and you don't try to get it at work as often and as expansively as it should, you're stealing from them by not calling them a lot, by not contacting them a lot. So one of the things you should do is develop a back end of products that you can go back to your clients with. If you don't have the system or the enterprise or the personnel or the capital to do it internally, it's no problem. In the world today, thanks to the global economy, there are no less than probably 1,000 great products or services in existence right now that you can acquire either to distribute, you can take over, you can license, you can private label, you can add to your purchase and put right down your distribution pipeline, your distribution channel access to your client, that they'll buy from you over and over and over again. Ask yourself this question. They just bought something from you, right? Right. What other products, services, etc., go along with that before, during, after the sale in the category? Case of point, I've gotten people like home improvement companies to add 20 different products and services because they realize that when someone changes carpet, they normally paint, they normally remodel, they normally fix their kitchen, they normally add new cabinets, they normally landscape. They don't do all those, they do a lot of those. So by just selling the carpet and nothing else, You're doing them a disservice, because if you can find them great suppliers of cabinetry, of painting, of roofs, of landscaping, of remodeling, and you can make it available, you can make a fortune from that and do them a greater service, because left to their own volition and their own devices, they might find a substandard person who'll steal from them, who'll make their life miserable, who'll do a shoddy job. Do you want that on your conscience when you can make a fortune beneficially by helping them have a richer, more fulfilled, more integrated, successful existence? Think about it. There's tons more things you could do, but I just want to make the point. You have available a ton more ways you can get more clients, a ton more and better ways you can increase the size of the transaction, a myriad of better ways and more infinite options and opportunities you can identify by traveling outside of your limitation, your myopia, your tunnel vision life, and becoming basically a funnel vision thinker. If all you ever did, remember our model way back at the beginning of the session, I talked about ABC Corporation with its 1,000 clients, its $100 unit of sale, its 2 purchase a year existence, and that was $200,000. Well, guess what? If all you ever did was increase the number of clients by 10%, you went from 1,000 to 1,100. If all you ever did was increase the size of the purchase from 100 by a mere 10% to $110, if all you ever did was take those 2 purchases a year and increase the frequency by a mere 10%, you didn't double it to 3, you just got it from 2 to 2.2, 2/10 more purchases per client per year. Guess what the combined, operative word, geometric impact that's going to have on your business results are? It's not 10%. It's, surprise, 33 1/3%. That mere, easy, simple, no-brainer, no-efforting 10% increase across the board just put 33 1/3% more revenue in your pocket. But that 33 1/3% more revenue isn't the real picture, because if your business was operating marginally or at or around break-even, that added 33% can be massive profit. That can be all the profit you make, or it could double or triple your profit. And what that means to you in your life is maybe the ability to pay off the mortgage, maybe the ability to buy another business or location, maybe the ability to buy a house 3 neighborhoods up, maybe the ability to send your family to better colleges or to college, maybe the ability to retire 3 or 4 times sooner than you imagine. And what it does to your business is make that asset, and your business is arguably the most valuable asset you've got, worth maybe 10 or 20 or 30 times more than it was before you did this, that for just 10% increase. Now, can we be a little more bold and daring and ambitious and geometric in our thinking? Thank you. What would happen if, instead of satisfying yourself with just one simple increase out of the dozens or hundreds of options I've shared with you, what if instead of just doing a attrition reduction program to add 10% more, or if instead of just doing 1 referral generating system to add 10% more, or instead of just doing a break-even acquisition to add 10% more, instead of just doing a better risk reversal to add 10% more, you got serious and you put to bear 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 or 25 of the options and activities and concepts available and approaches available, and you put them combined in a geometric effect, and you weren't ambitious enough to say, I'm going to double or triple, although it's really easy. Believe me, I've got thousands, not hundreds, but thousands of documented stories that you can go online to my website and see of companies that doubled and tripled and quadrupled by doing exactly what I'm urging and starting to ratchet your mind up to thinking about now. But if all you set your sights on was, okay, let's improve our clients by a mere 40%, because now we're going to be very strategic and we're going to be preeminent thinkers. Let's improve our size of our sale by not double or triple or even 50%, by a mere 25%. Let's improve the frequency of purchase by not double or triple, although it might be in the best interest of the client when you formally guide them and help program their buying activities as a courtesy to them, not as a manipulation, but to get them a greater outcome. Let's try to just get them 30, 40% improvement. Guess what? 50% more clients, 25, 40% higher unit of sale, 25, 40% more frequency of purchase. The combination of that is a mind blow. It becomes hundreds of percent more revenue and probably many hundreds of percent more aggregate profit, because guess what? You've now put to bear the full force of the power of geometry that I've been talking about and has been the thread that's run throughout the discussion we've had to date. You're using the power of geometric thinking and geometric actions. Thought is wonderful. Actions are better. Thinking isn't going to do it. Acting, implementing, executing, applying, systematizing, formalizing, integrating. That's the secret. It's exciting, isn't it?
Number three is increase the frequency, or if you've got only a one transaction product, the utility of either the client or the pipeline or the channel you've created. Now there's a model. This is going to be so exciting, I hope, to you. And it's so elegantly simple, and yet I swear to you, because I've done this all over the world, and I've done it in the most sophisticated companies and the most mundane, nobody gets it. The fact that you get it already gives you an advantage in your operating business, gives you advantage in raising money, gives you advantage in thinking through what business you want to stake and stock, because they don't have a clue. So this is a model. This is a hypothetical model that I created to reference the dynamic. Remember I talked earlier about lifetime value, marginal net worth? This is a model of hypothetical ABC company. And our model has a company that has currently, right now, 1,000 active clients. Those clients are spending $100 each time they purchase from them. They're buying on average 2 times a year. Are you with me? Okay, so how much revenue and volume are they doing? 200,000, okay? Most people, I mean, I'm sure many of you are very sophisticated in your academic achievements, and you're probably very well-schooled. Many of you might have just dauntingly impressive marketing and management credentials, but most people never really try to maximize the revenue performance of the kind of things we've talked about today. Most companies who have selling activities that use internal, external, telephonic, or any other form of selling men or women, captive or not, have never formally trained them in consultative or advisory selling. The mere fact that you do that and that alone, and also have never formally trained all the people who have client contact, i.e. receptionists, delivery people, accounts receivable, accounts payable, everybody. If you only did that, if you only got the most average, not the state-of-the-art sales trainer, but the most average quality, competent, professional, and ethical consultative advisory sales training, you can do it by buying a book, buying a tape set from a Nightingale Conant for $69, going to a $200 seminar, sending your staff, bringing a trainer in for, you know, locally $1,000, $2,000 a day. That one activity and action alone, nothing else, is guaranteed to improve the performance of your selling activities no less than 10% and as much as 1,000%. That one activity. Conversely, most people in business don't even have a clue of what their attrition rate is. Who knows what attrition means? Who doesn't? Attrition is the amount of any given universe that you lose. In business, in revenue, it means the amount of clients that either stop buying, become inactive, outright leave. Most companies don't have a clue what their attrition rate is. Most companies have a very high attrition rate right now because there's no loyalty. We're in a world where customer centricity is running amok. If you only know what your attrition rate is and you figure out how to reduce or abate it, it's the same thing as giving yourself a massive sales improvement. If you're losing 25% and you cut it in half, it's like giving yourself a 12.5% increase, isn't it? And most people don't even understand it. People stop dealing with you primarily for three or four reasons. Number one, they had an interruption in their life or their business that had no cause whatsoever on you, and they became habituated off of doing you. Maybe they went on vacation, maybe they got sick. It was summer and they couldn't do what they did or whatever, and they never started up again, even though their intent was the same. Number two, they had a bad experience they never brought to light, and they never told you about it, and they just stopped. They went somewhere else, or they stopped doing it. Number three, they outgrew the need for the product or service in their lives or their business. Number one, you can usually get back just by having some kind of a heartfelt communication, a call, a visit, a letter, invitation, a gift. Number two, if you go to people and you just, nice, don't confront them in a combative way, but you confront them literally in a heartfelt desire to find out why they stopped because you care about their well-being, and you get them to reveal that they had a bad transaction, anything from basically something broke and they were just mad at the vendor to where maybe a delivery person walked through their lawn and messed it up, or walked in their carpet and messed it up, or oogled their wife or their daughter. No, serious. anything in between that you didn't even mean or intentionally know about, and you would have corrected it on the spot. And you owe it to yourself if you practice a strategy of preeminence attitude that even if you never get that client back, you want to make sure that the last transaction they have with you is a satisfying and a fulfilling one. So you want to do the right thing anyhow. And you can't do the right thing if you don't know that they're not active. You can't know that they're not active if you don't have an attrition abatement program. You can't have an abatement program if you aren't contacting them and doing something about it. The last reason they normally leave is because they stopped having a need for your service. That's a perfect reason to go to them and get them to be a referrer of new business that has a need. But that'll never happen if you don't have a strategy in place. It all goes back to this macro strategy of maximizing, optimizing, multiplying. I can show you how to increase all these categories 10% like no-brainer, even if you think you're in the most competitive world. But if you only increase all three of these categories a nominal 10%, it doesn't translate to a 10% increase in revenue. It's geometric. It's 33 and a third. But you can see that if you do 33%, it becomes hundreds of percent. That is how you put the power of geometry to bear in your business. That's how you run rings around your competitors. That's how you skip complete levels and go from here to there easier, safer, more securely, predictably, and profitably than anybody else you're competing against.
Okay, now I've got you settled. You understand the four cornerstones of my business philosophy. You understand you got to maximize what you're doing before you can multiply your opportunities. You understand you got to borrow the success practices from outside. You understand you can't optimize till you first identify all the options and opportunities out there, and you can't do that till you travel outside your industry. You understand that you can't change the strategy that you're following until you become a preeminent thinker and start falling in love with your clients, not just your company, your product, and your people. And by the way, you have three elements of clients. I should make a very important distinction here. Number one, the people who pay you. Number two, the people you pay, both internally and externally. The people who pay you, as important as they are secondary until you first fall in love with your vendors and fall in love with your team members, because those are the critical link that make everything else work. You got to want them to do the best job they can. You got to want them to be as successful as possible. You got to envision those team members making all the money and having the success and having the fulfillment and helping the maximum number of people. You got to envision your vendors making a ton on you because they collaborate with you, because they come out with the best possible way and the newest breakthroughs, and they give you the most immediate access to new technology and products and services and collaborate with you continually to make you more effective to your clients. And until and unless you get those visions in mind, you can't be the preeminent thinker. But once you've got all that, until you recognize that the keys to geometric business thinking start with recognizing and applying all three of the three way to grow a business models, that unless you work on all three together, concurrently integrated as one unified strategic process, you can't bring the full power of geometry really to its force and magnitude. Now you're ready for the coup de grace, the cherry on the sundae, the icing on the cake. You ready? Now I'm going to explain and walk you through and share with you my power Parthenon of strategic geometric business growth. It's the ultimate strategy, the most disarmingly simple, powerful, predictable, profitable, and sustaining way that you can turn your current enterprise, no matter what it is, no matter where it is, no matter how large or small, simple or complex it is, into whatever size growth giant you want to be in your field, in your market, in your industry, in the global world. I mean it, in the global world. It's only limited by you. Now let's get into the philosophy. It starts by recognizing there are two kinds of business models. There's the diving board theory of business, then there's the Parthenon theory of business. Lamentably for everyone else, and actually lamentably for you until you met me a few hours ago, almost every business I've ever looked at, and I shudder to say even yours until this moment, operated itself on what I call the diving board theory of business flow. Now, if you'll help me, let's do a little reference model. Visualize, if you will, a country setting, a summer watering hole where kids swim. Visualize a tree cut down, a stump that has a big plywood board attached to it, and that's the diving board. Now, take that board on that stump out of that setting and project it in the back of your mind and visualize that diving board as being the model that unconsciously, unknowingly, and unstrategically, most business owners, and probably, frankly, yourself also, have operated their business by. The board itself is the revenue or the volume you're generating. Let's say you got a business that does $500,000. That's the board. The stump, the one pillar or base that's supporting it, is the one single primarily main approach or revenue activity that your business and almost every other business I've ever looked at depends upon singularly or solely to drive almost all their revenue. Frequently, not always, it's direct sales. It could be a retail store. Maybe you got a great location in a shopping center. It can be trade shows. It can be direct mail. It can be lead generating. It can be telemarketing. It can be any one thing, but it normally is, sadly for them and wondrously for you, normally one primary activity that almost everybody in business falls back on, depends on, concentrates on unconsciously, and that's the one primary method that is driving 80, 90, 100% of their business. Could be referrals, but not systematic and conscious referrals. It could just be ad hoc referrals coming whenever somebody thinks about it, but not with any semblance of order. The point is, if your business or if anybody's business is 100% or 90% and primarily dependent on just one activity to generate and sustain, keep in mind, it's not just generating, it's sustaining 100% of your revenue. What happens when any of a number of diabolical or detrimental events occurs to negatively impact the sanctity of that one pillar? What happens, for example, if direct sales has been driving your business and your salespeople decide they don't need you? They can go out and get a vendor to manufacture a private label for them, and they can be doing the same thing to the same market, but with their own name on it and making 10 times as much instead of 1/10. And tomorrow morning they compete against you. What happens if instead your competition hires them away with a signing bonus that you can't match, or a first-time commission because they understand Jay Abraham and they're willing to pay him all the commission on first sale and they hire him all away? Or what happens if we go into another energy crisis and instead of costing $200 to make a sale and travel and gasoline, it costs $500 and now marginal calls are no longer worthwhile? Or what happens if the method that they are using that may have been proprietary to you starts becoming either emulated, plagiarized, or worst, innovated by some upstart? Or what happens if a new business comes into play that is not directly competitive to yours, but is highly, highly related to that, and they decided to compete to get your customers first as a preemptive move to feed their mainstay business? So they set up a business sort of like what American Express is doing right now. American Express has been buying CPA and accounting firms left and right. They've bought hundreds of them, paid premiums, not because they care about making money from the accountant fees. That's pin money to them. They want a preemptive hold in accessing all the investment money, all the borrowings, all the financial services that all those clients of the accountants are going to do, the billions and billions and billions of back-end dollars. But the point is, they're funding buying all these accounting firms, and they're making these accounting firms stronger marketers and competing. But the point I'm making is, if you singularly depend on only one primary pillar or activity to drive your business, anytime anything happens in the world to compromise it, it can devastate you. It can compromise you. It can unravel your entire profit, success, and viability mix. And you're devastated. And at the moment you're devastated, you don't have the time, you don't have the capital, you don't have the ability, you don't have the responsiveness to come back. And it can just cripple or literally destroy your business. Now, fast forward to Jay Abraham, geometric thinker. And now let's envision a different world and a different reference example. Project yourself to Greece. You're on a hill at the Acropolis. There is the Parthenon, this majestic, towering, bold, strong, big, wide, stable, enduring fortress that's got all these pillars that have been around and endured for eons and ages, and it's endured and it's transcended dozens of different civilizations, hundreds of different wars, thousands and thousands of years of beating sun, of wind, of rain, of snow. And it's still there, and it's still mighty, and it's still sustaining, and it's been there before you, and it'll be there after you. And the only reason, quite frankly, it even looks a bit weathered is that some imbecile used it during World War II as a weapons armory storage facility, and some of the ammunition exploded. And even though it exploded there, it only destroyed a few of the pillars. It's still strong and intact and enduring and vital and robust. And that's what you want for your business. So envision, if you can, a mental model of your business no longer looking like a diving board with the left hand pillar having to support and sustain and be responsible for 100% of your future well-being. Instead, envision of what happens if you construct and install underpinnings of multiple pillars, 8 or 10 or 20 underneath, and each pillar is another activity that generates revenue. If you, for example, have built your business just by having a field sales force, what if you added a telephone department to call ahead and set up appointments, a telephone department that could identify and contact all kinds of smaller, more marginal activities or markets that you couldn't justify your salespeople going in, telephone people to call and sell specific products or specific industries? What if another pillar you installed was direct marketing that could go out and find prospects that your salespeople could call on, or could sell direct starter products, or could penetrate markets, or could invite people to come to special events, or all of the above? What if another one was you had strategic alliances and host beneficiaries as one Parthenon? You had a dozen companies that had relationships, bonded highly, highly rich relationships with clients, with subscribers, with members of people that respected them, that they could just tell those people, buy from your company, check out your company, talk to your people, get their advice. What if you had referral systems as a pillar, and you had ongoing formalized referral systems, and on and on? You had 8 or 10 or 12. Well, a number of things would occur if you could move your business to that level. Number one, you would no longer be dependent on that one primary activity, although it would probably actually and ironically improve, because all these other activities would be reaching and impacting and assailing the market from so many different vantage points and impact levels that people would have such a knowledge base and be advanced and move forward. Think about yourself. How many times have you ever gotten a sales letter that really moved you, but you just weren't ready to act, or you put it away and forgot about it? How many times have you gotten a phone call or seen an ad or walked by a booth at a trade show or had a sales presentation, not quite been ready, but been very motivated, and then something else would happen and it would move you over the edge? The combination, the integrated combination of all these effects together is profound and incalculable and geometric, but that's only one thing. If each one added a mere 10%, 20%, 15%, 30%, 50% more business. Remember my reference example, just the referral system alone, one system could double or triple your number of clients, but if you had not one, but three or four in place, it's a mind blow what it could mean. But if you have 8 or 10 or 12 pillars in your Power Parthenon supporting, expanding, protecting, enhancing, and combining the massive impact of everything, and each one was adding 10, 20, 30%, it is exactly and wondrously just like the three-way to grow a business model. When I showed you the 10% and 10% and 10% was 33 and a third percent, well, 20% more business coming from direct mail that you just added, 50% more coming from a referral system you just added, 15% coming from telemarketing you just added, 25% coming from special promotions you just added, 25% coming from host beneficiaries you just added, combine to guess what? Give you hundreds, if not thousands of percent improvement. And that's how I've grown clients all over the world. For example, I had a financial services company in the investment field one time. We had ads running. We had starter ads running. We had information ads running. We had 25 investment newsletters. We were the recommended vendor. They endorsed us. They strategically aligned with us. We basically had people who bought books on investing that got a free report in the book that they just sent in and we sent them. We had products we sold starter products on that just brought people in and walked them through the buying cycle. We had all of that going concurrently. We sold other books on the various form of investment because it found us people who had an inherent interest in the investment category. And then we switched them from information buyers to financial buyers. We had all of that going concurrently along with 25 other activities, and we went from a mind-blowing $300,000 of annual sales to $500 million in 24 months just because we did that. I ran Entrepreneur Magazine, and we went from $800,000 to $7 million in 9 months because we started building our model by a bunch of different pillars. We had display ads generating members. We had display ads generating product sales reports. We had joint ventures with 25 other people endorsing us. We did seminars that brought people in for $35, and then we switched them over and sold them up to 100 different products we had, and then we turned them into ongoing quarterly buyers. We had field people calling on quality entrepreneurial businesses. We had retail facilities in shopping centers selling them introductory products and getting their names so we could send them back other things. All those going all at the same time in a power Parthenon. And guess what? That increased their business literally from $800,000 to $7 million in 9 months. That's the kind of realistic, predictable, practical, and proven growth you've got available just by doing those two things. The three-way to grow business model attached to the strategy preeminence and then adding it to the power Parthenon. Now, if you get that far, which I hope and expect you to do in the next 6 to 9 or 12 months, now it gets neat because under every pillar, you can build a sub-Parthenon. Remember we talked about the fact that most people don't even have one referral system? Well, if you add a referral system as your Parthenon, that alone could add 50 to 150% increase just from that one activity. Again, multiplied times the other 8 or 9 or 12 pillars you're going to add, that's incredible. But if you said, hey, I like this geometric growth stuff. I'm going to get serious. I'm going to add an entire Parthenon under that pillar of referral systems. I'm going to take Jay's 93 referral systems or 50 other referral systems I learned by studying the success processes of other companies and other industries that use referrals as a primary generator, and I'm going to isolate what they do and what the driving principle behind them is, the universal force, and I'm going to translate it, adapt it, adopt it, apply it to me, and I'm going to have 8 different referral systems going. I'm going to have regular ones going. I'm going to have seasonal ones going. I'm going to have special convergent events, streamlined other ones. I'm going to have special preferred buyer referral programs. I'm going to have all kinds of things going on under the main referral system, and I'm going to do that in 12 or 15 other pillars in my Parthenon. You've just blown the mind of everyone in business school on the concept of geometric business growth because you're getting geometry on geometry. I don't even know the mathematical formula to calculate it, but it's a mind-blowing. And that, my dear entrepreneurial now geometric business growth friend, is how you grow your business geometrically without risk, without a lot more effort. In fact, it's conceivable it's with less effort, with far more certainty, with far more predictability. And keep in mind this. Most business owners that I have dealt with don't at first realize that if you grow your business by 3 or 4 times, but you grow your profit by 5 or 10 times, and those profits are quality, enduring, sustaining profits, you have grown your net worth by a multiple of 10 or 20 times those profits. Because when you get a business that's operating systematically, when you get a business that's operating strategically, when you get a business that's a well-honed, ongoing, money-making, performance, preemptive, preeminent business machine, there are dozens and dozens, if not hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of other people in or outside of business that will stand in line and take a ticket for a lottery to win the chance to bid prime dollar to buy that from you whenever you want. Jay Abraham 101 says it simply, either you work hard for your business or your business works harder for you. Most people are in the former. They work and slave as hard as is humanly possible and nobly but unnecessarily in behalf of their business, when in fact they could make the same effort or less, the same time or less, the same money or less, the same people or less, the same opportunity or less, work 2 or 3 or 10 or realistically 100 times better for them. And they could basically make that business the greatest asset they ever had, the greatest investment they ever make, the greatest wealth creator they ever build. And in my book, and it's only mine, but I'd like to hope you take a page from it, your business should be worth an infinite amount more to you when you're tired of it than it is when you're there. If your business is only worth money to you when you're working and slaving every day, you're not building an asset. You just got a hopefully a high-paying job, and you're basically shackled to it. You should build this business systematically so it's worth a ton more when you're tired of it. That's my wish for you. That's my geometric growth system.
Politics is one big idea. Okay, what happens if you just add one more approach? Well, you can see already that it's more stable, can't you? My vision for each and every one of you, irrespective, literally, of the state and the status and the stage, your current enterprise or your business plan vision or your pulsating glint in your eye or your just curiosity is taken, is that the enterprise that you unleash on the business world will be modeled after what I call the Power Parthenon. I call it that because I'm a pretty basic graphic thinker. This reminds me of the Parthenon in Greece. And my vision for you is you don't depend on one process. You engineer at least 8, and each one does 2 things. It accesses a different vector point of opportunity and impact on the market you're after. It gives you enormous reach, breadth, and flexibility. For example, there might be a lot of markets you can't justify going after with a live salesman or woman or a manufacturer's rep, but you can start them or penetrate the small marginal ones or specific types of product applications by telemarketing. Telemarketing can also be used to set the stage for a sales call. Telemarketing can also be used to reactivate inactive clients. Telemarketing can also be used to invite people to come to special events when you're trying to sell new products to get more transactions. Referral systems, great point. How many of you who don't have at least one referral system but get between 50 to $2 billion in referrals or more spend any amount of money on any other form of marketing? Selling, promotion, brochures, advertisements. Okay, we know because I've studied 400 industries. I know 93 unduplicated referral systems, and I'm here to tell you that almost no company has even one formally that everybody at key intervals, key times, key transactional periods, key convergent points ever uses. I want to ask a question. This is going to be your big chance to demonstrate that J. Abraham is a crock of whatever. You're going to be able to show that I am a deluded, theoretical optimist, maybe. In my deluded, hallucinatory belief, I have this bizarre belief that a referral-generated client buys easier, buys more, often, is more profitable, negotiates less, is more pleasurable to deal with, brings on a heck of a lot more people like him or her, and costs pretty much nothing to generate. If I'm wrong, sit down. If I'm right, ask yourself, what's wrong with this picture? I'm trying to show you the logical connections. Remember we talked about sandwiches, ice cream cone, toilet paper. I'm trying to make a few of those connections now for you. Does that make sense? But the point I'm making, and I was going through the little exercise of why you want to engineer a Parthenon of multiple power pillars, all driving it together. Do you see that? Because what it does, and we're talking about working on the geometry of the business. We're talking about going from linear to lateral. We're talking about going from incremental to exponential. The key to this is the following. What you learn from process improvement is if you increase the performance of 20 different things, 3% here, 5% here, 20% here, 10% there, the aggregation is compound geometric. Do you understand that? Well, I've given you about 7 different ways to add geometry on geometry on geometry. 3 ways to grow a business. Power Parthenon. Each one of these will impact either the market or segments of the markets, and they'll add. This may be 100% of your sales right now, but all of a sudden, if you have 8 or 10, each one can add 10, 5, 7, 12, 25, 100. The referral systems could triple, quadruple, quintuple your business. I have seen companies literally start revering themselves and the value of their product or service transactionally at work in somebody's business to the point that they actually made referral generation a condition of doing business with them. If you didn't give me quality referrals, and I'm not talking about names to call, but you had people call me within 6 months of buying my product, I had either I wouldn't take your business, or I had two different pricing schedules, one with and one without referrals. You can take it to that level. It's a mind blow. But if